Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist, and we're opening today talking about the new, overhauled, maybe improved basketball roster. So, Kevin, let's start out. Tell me about the transfers coming in.
Well, there's only one, and that's going to be Jaden Dunn, the guard from Virginia Commonwealth that picked Baylor over the likes of Texas and Indiana and a couple of others that were in the mix for him. I guess before we really get into a deep dive on these guys, I think the way to look at this Baylor roster for next year is that I think they're actually going to be physically bigger. We're going to have taller guards in there than what we've seen on a Baylor backcourt in years. I mean, Baylor has started to go away to taller guards over the last several years, but this is probably going to be the biggest group of guards per se that I think that I've seen. So you have what's coming. You have Jaden Dunn, who is established commodity at VCU. He's 6'4". Then you have your two incoming signees from the 2023 class, and that's Merrill Little. He's 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", depending on which one you want to look at. And then you have Jacoby Walter, who is originally from Branson, Missouri, and then he was at Lincoln Academy over in McKinney, just north of DFW. But he's a wing. He can be a guard, but he's 6'5". So he could be a small forward, tall guard, you know, that kind of thing. So if you have a backcourt like that with 6'4", 6'4", 6'5", with those three mixed in, it kind of changes the dynamics how Baylor may want to play this year, because I think, you know, they're still going to be a shooting heavy team. That's what they do. Baylor shoots a bunch of three pointers, and that's how they're going to make their living with this thing. And they're going to try and, but what they have to do with this team, as we know, based on the way last year finished, is they have got to get far better on the defensive end of the floor. They got absolutely ripped to shreds in the last 3 weeks of the season, essentially. And I'll go back to where it all kind of fell apart in the second half at Kansas, basically for the remainder of the season. And we can remember how Creighton just blitzkrieged them in the NCAA tournament. And so Baylor just has to get better defensively. I think Little has a chance to be a pretty good defender. Some people feel like when it comes to Jaden Dunn's game, the VCU transfer, that he has a chance to be really, really good defensively. He probably has to work on some elements of his game to get better defensively. Jacoby Walter is a guy that, and again, with all freshmen, you know, everyone, what's unfair is that everyone will try and say, can they be as good as defensively as Davion Mitchell? Well, Davion was, you know, unto himself. I think he was just one of those guys that just had the instincts, foot speed, all the gifts that require you to be a really excellent defender. And you can work, and so trying to make comparisons to that is not fair. But you can be a solid defensive team, and that's what Baylor has to be next year. If Baylor wants to be an NCAA tournament team, which they should be with this team next year, they'll be younger, but they'll be better, I think, if you will, because they're going to have new faces in the lineup. And Baylor wouldn't put together this schedule, you know, where they're going to the NIT with Pitt, Oregon State, you know, that sort of thing, and then possibly getting this game together with Duke over at Madison Square Garden sometime in December. They wouldn't put this roster together if they didn't feel like that this team could compete at this level. When you sign kids like this, you play games like this in November, December to get yourself ready to play in the Big 12. And so I think what this team shows me is that they're going to be fun to watch, and I really hope for their sake they're going to be better defensively. Now, the other issue for this team, and we'll get to these guys in just a second, but the other issue for this team is, what are they going to get in the post defensively? I mean, offensively, with Baylor bigs in the past, it's always been kind of like hit and miss. If you get 6 and 8 from a guy, 10 and 12 from a guy, game in and game out, that's a bonus. If you were to get it consistently, it would be like manna from heaven. But Baylor just really hasn't had that over the years. Now, they were getting that from, you know, all day, every day, John, I should say, but, you know, with his career kind of in a different, you know, atmosphere because of the fact that he went down with that catastrophic knee injury. And when he came back last year, you know, he just kind of ran out of gas, and he's just not the same player he was. The question is, what is Baylor going to get from the block? Well, your two big you know, options are going to be Josh Ojiwona, who played some last year, had some good moments, had some freshman moments. And then you've got Missy, who reclassified this year because Baylor needs size size. And with all young bigs, there's going to be a serious, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A serious growth learning curve that he's going to be on to understand what's going to take to play at a high level at the P5 Division I college game.
Do you see the players coming in as being complementary to the guys that are still left on the team, or do you see them as replacing some of the guys that are currently on the team?
I see them as replacing them. I mean, because look at it this way. You know, LJ Cryer is gone. He went back home to Houston. Adam Flagler, by all accounts, as we're recording this afternoon, both he and Jalen Bridges, by the way, have until 11 o'clock Central Time Wednesday night to decide they're going to stay in the draft or they're going to withdraw and return to school. But anyway, I think if Flagler were to return as we're recording this, it changes some of that dynamic in terms of how these guards will play a little bit. But for overall, they're going to be replacements. I expect Walter and Little to be starters for this team next year, along with maybe Langston Love. I think if Flagler doesn't come back, then you're looking at a three-guard rotation or three-guard lineup, starting lineup, with Little, Walter, and Langston Love. And then the other two spots would be Ojiwona and maybe somebody else, Bridges if he comes back. But then that fourth spot, I'm not sure how that would look. You know, that could be D'Antuan Grimes, the JUCO point guard that they redshirted last year, who I think will play the point. But the benefit of that is that Little can play the point. He played a lot of point when he was in Finland, and then when he came to Sunrise Christian Academy in Wichita this past year to get acclimated to the United States brand of ball. So you're going to have two different types of point guards on the floor. I just think these guards are going to be more physical. But, and then with Walter, I think, you know, since they're here, I think what Walter has to do, well, all of them have to get stronger in the strength and conditioning program. We all know that. That kind of goes without saying kind of thing. But what I will say is that I really believe that in Walter's case, he's a guy that can be, who can create his own shot. You know, he's a great shot taker when he knows what he wants to do with the ball and how to create space for him, that sort of thing. He did not have a very good shooting year last year. He was less than 30% from the arc. He was about 43% overall. And those aren't great shooting numbers. But you look at the overall talent and you look at the overall gifts that he has, and that's why he was the number 13 player in the country when Baylor signed him last year. And so I think so what he has to do this summer is he's got to work on all sorts of different things about being a much more efficient offensive player. Sometimes these highly touted basketball, you know, recruits get the freedom to do what they want without disciplining their games. But now he has the opportunity to come to Baylor, really work on his game, discipline it, become a much more efficient offensive player, and also work toward being a better defensive player. That's why the coaches, you know, get 8 hours a week with these players in the summertime before fall classes start. That's going to be huge for these guys to get them. I mean, there's no exchange for, you know, game experience when you go up against somebody who's wearing a different uniform other than yours and how you're going to have to attack them. And that doesn't matter if it's Nicholls State or if it's going to be Duke. You've got to just learn how to play against those types of guys and learn how to figure it out and let your game shine. But I think I really like this class that Scott and his staff brought in. I think they have an opportunity to be super good, really do. And I think they have a chance for Baylor to get right back into the Big 12 race next year and contend with it. Now, Kansas is going to be the overwhelming favorite to repeat as Big 12 champions. They just will. You know, they got some great guys coming in. You know, they got the Michigan center who transferred to them. Kevin McCullough just announced that he was returning. So those are big things in KU's cap. But I really feel like Baylor, if they can get these guards moving in the right direction, and I think they can play a much more physical brand of ball, it's going to make a difference for how they play this coming season.
Yeah, and Kansas is going to be the overwhelming favorite, but Kansas State has made great use of the portal with Jerome Tang, and they made the Elite Eight last year, so you know they're going to get some love too.
Yeah, they're going to have some love on that for sure. You know, the Big 12 is always going to be good. Let's just understand it. Like we saw last year with this conference, that they just absolutely beat the bejeebers out of each other. And unfortunately, no one got to the Final Four because I think maybe the toll of the conference season just zapped it out of everybody. I think Kansas State and Texas were the last team standing until they each lost in the Elite Eight. But at the same time, but again, this conference is going to be really good, and Baylor will be right in the middle of it. And I think, again, kind of like what I said about this team last year, is they'll probably take some bumps, you know, kind of like when they got blitzkrieged at Marquette last year. But they'll get better on the other side. This team, I think what people will have to watch for with this team when it gets going in November, and especially when they get to the NIT, and, of course, when they play Seton Hall in the Big East, Big 12 Challenge, that'll be December 5th in Waco. But when they see these teams, is what are they going to be defensively? Because that's going to be the one thing that's always going to challenge. That's going to be the one question, is how much better are the Bears defensively? I think offensively they'll be really good, and I think they'll be a much more physical team, like guys doing more pick and rolls, that sort of thing. But they're just going to have to get stops.
Right. Now, I've been thinking for a little while that with basketball in particular, they're going to have to start looking at it more like JUCO coaches look at it, where, you know, you have 100% roster turnover every 2 years. Because you look at the guys with Baylor that aren't coming back, you know, you got Famba, George, you got Flagler, Jalen Bridges, we don't know, you know.
Well, Flagler maybe not, but I mean, remember, because he declared, and we don't know if he's coming back or not, and it's unlikely, but again, you just don't know until you know.
But how many of those were your starters that are going? So it's like, you know, the turnover is so much greater now. And one of the things this summer is, and it's going to become an annual summer thing, is that these teams are going to have to learn, they're going to have to get to know each other every year, because the dynamics are going to change every year now.
You know, basketball and football rosters are starting to look similar to each other in terms of just the turnover. There's tremendous turnover with all of them. And what did we talk about with Baylor's team last week's podcast? 33 new players. That's nearly 40% of the roster. That's huge. It's like basically overhaul. If you were to just put it out there in layman's terms, 33 players, that's like replacing both your entire starting offensive and defensive teams, if you look at it that way in some respect, which is not accurate, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, because they're not all starters. Some of the guys that are going out are guys that they went out because they weren't starting.
Right, but you see what I'm saying, though, is that you're basically replacing more than one-third of your roster, which is huge now in football, but that's becoming commonplace. So now football programs have to adjust to this. Basketball has been going through this for several years, so they've kind of had a head start on this. And I will say, from the standpoint of what this will mean for this basketball team, again, with so much turnover that they have, you have four new faces coming in. And again, you have 13 scholarships. So that's whammo, 33% of your roster right there. You know, and it's almost like all these coaches, and again, Scott could actually add one or two more grad transfers before the season starts, or I should say before the fall semester starts in August, because you can still get a grad transfer now. It's just weird because of this May 31st NBA declaration deadline, where players who have declared but are maintaining their eligibility, whether or not they're going to stay in it or come back, all these answers are flooding in. And so once these things get finalized, then you can start to say, hey, I know you, and I know you, and I remember you, and hey, nice to meet you. That's when it really starts in June. And that's why these 8 hours in June are so valuable to building your chemistry with your team and start getting the fundamental things down, because that's going to be part of the learning curve of what Missy, Little, Walter, and of course Nunn all have to do, is understand the Baylor way of doing things, from how you come to practice, how you practice, how you run the offense, and how you play defense, and all those other things.
And the other thing that really goes out the window is that there's not near as much getting mentored by the older players that have been there for 3 or 4 years, because not mm-hmm. that many of them have.
Right, exactly. And so, okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so your bet on Bridges comes back, leaves.
Golly, I mean, as of this recording, I'm going to say he's going to come back, because I've seen too many players of his caliber. And I equate him to Kevin McCullough in a lot of respects. As I just don't see how Jalen would benefit to staying in the NBA draft, because, for one, all the projections have shown him to be a second-round pick at best. And, again, those contracts in the NBA are not guaranteed, or a G League, or he's going to have to stay and just play in the NBA G League or go overseas. I don't know if he wants that. But, again, it's his life, and he has to live it. But I just think that he would be benefit. It would benefit him if he returned. I think he will. But I also thought my Twins were going to be a great baseball team, and they're not either. So,
yeah. Well, hey, life goes on.
Right.
All right. So let's jump to what's creating a lot of this confusion, all this other kind of stuff, and it comes down to two things. One is the transfer portal, and the other is NIL. Now, I've been doing a little background checking on it, and last year, 21 to 22, there were nearly 21,000 D1 student athletes entered the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Only 12,000 of those found a home at a new school.
So
9,000 of them ended up, because once you enter the transfer portal, hey, guess what? You're giving up the school can then reduce your scholarship. They can kick you completely off the team. They can do whatever they want. And in some instances, it's kind of like remember back to when you were a teenager and you're dating somebody and they say, hey, I think I'd like to see somebody else. Like, that relationship is never the same again.
Yeah. It's now, it has happened where guys, it's kind of like guys that decommit and make mm-hmm. themselves open again. It's like the chances of them recommitting to the school that they just decommitted to, that they just decommitted from, very, very low. Okay. So my suspicion here, and so that doesn't surprise me. And it also doesn't surprise me too, that number of players did not find a new place. And if that meant that they couldn't come back to where they were, if they were just floating out there, they kind of got, if you will, it's, now, here's the thing about the portal. It's kind of like, be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, because, if we're, what we're seeing here over the last 2 years since the portal became a thing, July 1st of 2021, and good work on your part, by the way, on this stuff. Thank you. But I think what we're learning here is that all these portal things are, you basically have, what's the word, conduits, agents, parents, or whatever, that are reaching out to school and say, hey, my son's going to get in the portal. Are you guys interested in talking to him? And then you get, there's always, because some of these deals aren't lined up. I'll give you a perfect example from my alma mater, SMU, wide receiver Jordan Hudson. Here's the story on him. And I'm just using this as an example. He had committed to SMU as a five-star receiver out of Garland when Sonny Dykes was there. Sonny takes the job over at TCU, and then Jordan flips to TCU and signs with the Horned Frogs. Then we get word back in the winter that things are not going very well. He did play in the playoff. I know he caught a couple passes against Michigan in that semifinal for TCU. But the word starts to get out that TCU's NIL, through back channels, that TCU's NIL program might not be as solvent as people thought it was going to be. And so he bolts. And where does he end up? He winds up coming back to SMU because, as I've talked about on a couple times on this podcast, again, just for the sake of reference, is that SMU, because I know SMU, of course, is they've got their NIL program really entrenched. And I think that made a big difference in him coming back. There were other schools that were after him, like Arizona State and Auburn, but apparently those fell through. So whatever SMU has or whatever those other schools have, what I'm saying to you is that all these other things that are in place is that there's a lot of legwork done for some of these players, because Keytron Jackson was the same way with Baylor in some respects, because they were battling SMU and they beat SMU for him. Is you have to look at it and say, what legwork has to be done if we're going to really improve our chances of landing this guy? So when a guy goes into the portal, he pretty much knows where he's going to go, or at least he'll have his pick of schools because they're the most talented ones. When it comes to the afterthought, like Mike Harris, safety from Baylor who went into the portal, he doesn't have a place to go yet. And if Mike winds up going anywhere, he's probably going to have to go to a JUCO down in Mississippi somewhere, or he's going to have to wind up going to an FCS program. And that's the unfortunate reality of it. And so, you know, that it's, but, you know, the moral of the story of the portal is get your people who are working with you to get their feelers out to see what's out there and see who would be willing to talk to you about this once you quote unquote technically enter the portal, because you can't tell me that it's, oh, I'm just going out there. Somebody will be interested in me. Doesn't work that way, especially if you're a hot commodity like a Jordan Hudson was, or Keytron Jackson was, or Mike Smith was, or Johnny Carter, the defensive back from Utah State that committed to Baylor a couple weeks ago and then obviously signed.
Yeah, and the NIL is the second part. You know, the portal is one part. The NIL is the second part.
Right.
And right now the NIL is nuts. Nobody knows how many companies / agencies / groups there are out there. Estimates are there are over 1,000 groups trying to get contracts with players for NIL. And some of these are affiliated with individual colleges and booster clubs and stuff like that. But you also have that Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri have all passed laws that will help bring it under their roof, and it will prohibit enforcement from the NCAA. And then California is trying to get a bill through now that is going to force colleges to share revenue with the athletes. Over 30 states have put in laws affecting NIL, and so the NCAA is trying to get, and they want to get it done before the next presidential election, because nothing gets done the last year before the election. No, yeah. Really. I mean, everybody's trying to get reelected. But they want to do three things. They want to provide a national name, image, and likeness standard. They want to deem college athletes as students and not employees. And
not realistic, but anyway, keep going.
And they want protection from legal challenges so the NCAA can create more rules.
Right.
That's because they get their rear ends kicked every time they go to court.
So two things about this. Okay, so first of all, on the Texas one that's passing and it's going through right now, is that even though there had been some misconceptions that only the public schools like Texas, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, and other public schools would be shielded from NCAA rules enforcement, that sort of thing. That's not true. That would help all the private schools as well. So that's Baylor, TCU, SMU, you know, that sort of thing. So the private schools are protected in this. The second one is the Oklahoma one is interesting because the story was that the governor of Oklahoma vetoed this rule, and then the Senate overrode his veto on this. And so I think, you know, and look at it like this. You have Oklahoma going to the SEC, and then you need to make Oklahoma State stand tall, as tall as it can in the Big 12. And I think that's going to be really kind of interesting to see how it all breaks down, with these other schools. But I personally think, you know, the NCAA is, again, this is no different, Stephen, than what we were talking about before. And this is what frustrates me to no end. Is the NCAA, and I knew this was going to happen, when they just threw the doors open on NIL on July 1st of 2021, with really no guidelines or way to do this because they got so spooked by the Ed O'Bannon trial because they lost on this and lost bad. They were so spooked they had to just throw it open. Well, now they, but it's like, I think you used this example in the past when we talked about this. It became the Oklahoma land rush where everyone just took off and ran for themselves on this, which is unfortunate, but that's kind of the way it went down. And then, so then it's kind of like now you're having to play catch up because the fact that you set something up that was so poorly set up, you could have, if you didn't, if you had just tried to get something in place that would navigate this, but because of what you did, now you're trying to play catch up and now you're trying to look like you're Dudley Do-Right. Well, you're Dudley Doofus is what you are.
Yeah, and there's some other things that are going to come up on this. Number one, you know that Title IX and equalization between men and women in NIL is going to come up in any bill that goes before Congress. And then you're also going to have to address, like I think A&M has a thing now where you get, they have a booster club out there, but you actually get priority points for seating and season tickets and all that kind of stuff for making contributions to NIL. So
right.
Now the schools are actually, and I don't guess you can really call it money laundering, but it's kind of money laundering. And, you know, that you've got federally funded institutions or state funded institutions that are basically functioning as the go-between between these people and the players.
Yeah, and again, these are all, and again, these collectives with NIL cannot be affiliated with the school per se. There can be kind of like a hint, nod, and the school can kind of point you in the right direction for collectives, but they can't be involved with these things. But you're right, and so there has to be a lot of private dollars involved with the commitment to making this work. And so what does that take? Well, that takes a great grassroots effort for these collectives to be solvent year after year, because they're only as good as the amount of people that are participating in them, as well as the amount that they are contributing to them. Of course, you can get businesses now. Just this is an evolving process with NILs to see how you can get these, how you can collect the money between just, you know, private citizens, businesses, that sort of thing. What's going to be the benefit to them? That sort of thing. That'll be fun to watch because, you know, there's more and more layers and storylines that will come out of this.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, my last point on this, you know those numbers I gave for the transfer portal in between 2021 and 2022? I really want to see what the numbers are going to be for 2022-23.
Yeah,
because we've seen it blow up at Baylor, and you're going to see it blow up everywhere else.
I think it's going to be a higher number than what you quoted earlier on this podcast. But I also think, too, the gap, because what there's a 9,000 gap between those who entered and those who still have a place, are still looking for a place to play. 9,000 of the 21,000 didn't find a spot, and I bet you that gap's going to be bigger. I would suspect that that gap's going to be pushing. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, there's 27,000 student athletes that enter the portal. I'm thinking that you're probably going to have about 15,000 to 16,000 who will have found new locations.
Yeah, and you've got to consider that for most of these guys, I think the average player makes between somewhere between 5,000 and 50,000. You have maybe five per P5 team that'll make over 100,000, but you know, annually. But these players are getting scholarships worth, you know, 50,000-60,000 a year already. And
oh, yeah.
Some of them are giving that up.
Well, I'll tell you this right now, because I just got done paying for college and owing my soul. But I can tell you, like, my tuition for Kylie, my Crimson Tide, just graduated for both semesters at Alabama. Of course, this is out-of-state tuition talking here. But it was between 35 and 40,000 for between those two semesters or senior year. And so if you think about that, if you think about the scholarship that they're on, then you tack on whatever their NIL deal is, they're probably getting a deal, again, just on a year to year basis, but just on a year basis, probably going to be about 80,000, you know, 80,000, 90,000, depending on what kind of player they are, how valuable they are to their respective team, that sort of thing. And, you know, now the Title IX in the women's sports, trying to find equal dollars versus the men's, good luck with that, because you're going to find, because just the common interest in women's sports is not equal to what the common interest is for men's sports. And if you try to drive that, I mean, look, they drove Title IX to people, say you got to have equal number of sports or scholarships, that sort of thing, which is fine. But when it comes to the dollars, you cannot tell private citizens you have to have this much NIL money in it, because once you start doing that, people will pull out and say, well, I'm not going to do that. And then your collective, and then what happens is that your collective falls apart. And there is no collective.
It does. All right. You want to close it out for us?
Okay. So so on Friday, I will have a story detailing all of the players that will have OBs, official visits scheduled for Baylor, because they're not having any OBs this week, but they're going to have their first 3 weeks or their next 3 weekends in June 9th through the 11th, June, what is that, 16th through the 18th, and then the 23rd through the 25th will be their big three official weekend times. And I will have that list together for everybody. Obviously, we'll keep track of the Jalen Bridges and Adam Flagler stories, which will be kind of known what long after this podcast was recorded. But of course, we'll update it on that thread in separate stories. And we'll just kind of keep posting along as we're getting into June. Happy June, everybody. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.